Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm John Connolly, and I'm joined today by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. Now today, the government continued its ongoing scrutiny of the BBC, and in particular focused on the licence fee today. Nicky Morgan, the head of the Department for Culture, Media and Sport, announced that the government was going to conduct an 8-week review into whether the licence fee should be decriminalised. And Nicky Morgan said that there were legitimate concerns that criminalisation was unfair and disproportionate. Now, Katie, there's already been one review into decriminalisation under David Cameron, which found that the licence fee shouldn't be people shouldn't be criminalised for not paying it. Do you think there'll be a difference this time?
Well, I think this number 10 is quite determined to decriminalise the licence fee. Nicky Morgan's speech today isn't particularly unsurprising in the sense of things that have been reported on, and there was speculation it was heading this way. I think that when it comes to this 8-week consultation period, I can't see that much from it which is going to persuade them otherwise. I think what would be interesting is, do they come to an agreement where they perhaps sort some type of financial arrangement with the BBC to make up for anyone who is therefore not paying the licence fee? Or is it more of a swift cut on that angle? So I do think we're heading to a situation where the licence fee is decriminalised. Other questions though, does that mean that if you don't have a licence fee and you refuse to pay it, that your credit rating will no longer be affected? I think there's details like that that we will have to find out how it pans out. But I think the general sense is they are determined to decriminalise. I think that if you look at her other comments, I think one of the top news lines to come from this speech was TV licence could be abolished from 2027. And this idea is not just about decriminalisation. What is the future of the BBC? Now there is a healthy majority Tory government. And I think that you could hear from what Nicky Morgan was saying in terms of she warned that if the BBC was not careful, it could end up being, you know, blockbusters. If people remember that on this podcast, you know, the video hire shop that clearly got outpaced by everything else and eventually had to shut down. So I think that it poses some interesting questions for how the BBC is supposed to compete in the years to come and if it should be competing. I think there is a sense that this government, doesn't believe that the BBC is best placed trying to cater to every audience, and I think they might try and limit some of its remit to things that do seem to be more in the general interests of, you know, information and the public, rather than, I suppose, some of the things others might call frivolous programmes.
I mean, James, a lot of people are going to see this as a very direct attack on the BBC from the government. Do you think that's a fair characterisation?
I think we should first say that any giggling is not about the future of a licence fee. It is that
no laughing matter.
The editor has just arrived at the table with a food product that I think Public Health England would deem to be the calorie count for most of... there are only 28 days in February,
what?
So probably not. February is not long enough.
What is
probably
it?
Several months.
You know, I'm not on this podcast, but you guys are defaming it. This is a Scottish delicacy. This is a Dalgety bun. It's basically a raisin cake. It is delicious.
I've not seen one of those in East Lothian.
Seem to be made available in the Spectator shop.
Proceeding to eat the entire cake.
It tastes good. You're welcome.
No, anyway, so on the BBC, I think the question right now is that the point that is made by people who do opinion research is that one of the things you can see is that Netflix, Amazon Prime subscriptions, all of these things have sort of changed how people think about the BBC licence fee, because they now have something that they pay for entertainment that they can compare it to. And so people are assessing whether it is value or not. And I mean, there is another problem for the BBC, which is the BBC feel that they have a particular problem with the under 30s, that kind of mythic group, because that they don't sit down and watch TV in the way that perhaps kind of past generations did. And so the BBC are kind of going very hard to try and kind of reach this audience in all sorts of ways. But that is creating new tensions, because it means, A, they are getting into... People feel that the BBC elephant is beginning to trample commercial providers in areas like podcasts. And also, it is taking the BBC... The BBC also think the way to reach this audience is to do stuff that people don't see the public service merit in. So Olivia Utley has a rather good piece in The Sun this morning saying that, you know, let's look at the fact that, you know, the BBC, most popular, most read story on BBC News on the weekend was about kind of Kim Kardashian, right? Is that public service broadcasting? The BBC now have a podcast on reality TV. Again, is that public service broadcasting? And so I think the BBC face a kind of series of kind of strategic choices that they need to make. I think if one was advising the BBC now, I mean, they have two strong, particularly strong cards to play. One is, you know, the union is under massive strain at the moment. The BBC is undoubtedly one of the institutions that kind of underpins the kind of cultural aspects of the union. And I think that that, when you talk to Tory MPs, the thing that I think that is probably the thing that makes them feel most protective of the BBC at the moment. And the second thing is, you know, the creative industries are a great British export. And if the BBC became a kind of vehicle for that, that would make it fit in with the kind of broader kind of idea of a post-Brexit Britain.
I mean, James, you mentioned strategy before. And Katie, do you think the BBC, this sort of battle that the government has against the BBC is kind of on multiple fronts as well? And I think the government came slightly unstuck today when it was asked whether it was going to continue its boycott of the Today programme. Do you think as it sort of ramps up the attacks on the BBC that things like the boycott will have to end?
I don't think the boycott will have to end. I think, I mean, I don't think that this government, even though people are making that point, I don't think this government views them as things that particularly link up. And I also think that it's not as though the government is refusing to send ministers on any BBC show. It's a specific show. Now, you can criticise that and say, ultimately, they should be, and people made the point this week, given that there had been a terrorist incident, you should be sending people up onto these things. But I think that the way this number 10 tends to work on media is they will do enough, usually, to send a minister onto a similar show or a show in the same realm, perhaps a little bit to chide the producers on the show they don't like, but also to make the point that they're not completely hiding from scrutiny. So you can see it in the sense, I thought it was interesting this week, for example, and this isn't the BBC, but previously you've had Boris Johnson going on The World at One rather than the Today programme. I think that this week you have Good Morning Britain, the ITV programme. So it's not just a BBC issue here. I think that's probably worth pointing out. But Good Morning Britain are not getting any ministers on their programme. There's an ongoing spat there. But this morning got Priti Patel on. So I think that you probably have to separate their two approaches. And I think they are still sending people onto shows. It's clearly going to annoy some people, but I don't think from the number 10 perspective, they are linked.
I think also one of the things about the BBC is it doesn't quite operate in the way that you would expect it to. So it is not a single monolith. All the individual programmes fight their corner. Mm-hmm. And they have proved very adept, you know, Boris Johnson's team, at playing the BBC off against each other. So, you know, during the election campaign, Boris Johnson did Andrew Marr, not Andrew Neil. You know, the BBC didn't say, oh, you can't do that one if you don't do that one. You know, at the beginning of this year, Boris Johnson didn't give the traditional kind of curtain-raising interview to either the Today programme or to Andrew Marr, but he did an interview with BBC Breakfast, which then led all the BBC bulletins because there were news lines in it. So in a way, partly because of the way it is funded, the BBC can't say, well, you can't appear on this, you can't appear on any bit of the BBC unless you do what we want you to. So the BBC, there'll always be ways to go round particular programmes. I mean, that is a kind of challenge the BBC hasn't quite worked out how to respond to.
We should also mention today the fact that PMQs took place with Boris Johnson squaring off once again with Jeremy Corbyn while the Labour leadership contest continues. James, you were watching PMQs. Were there any interesting sort of news stories to come out of it?
Oh, there are two interesting bits of PMQs, neither of which involved Jeremy Corbyn. One was Damian Green, very good question, backbench question on Huawei, basically saying, are you planning to reduce that 35% market share Huawei will have in 5G every year, to which Boris Johnson said yes, but the question he didn't answer was, and what year will it drop to zero? I think the first part of the answer is enough to calm most of the Tory rebels, but I don't think he'll assuage all of them until he can start giving a vague date for the zero point. And then I thought the last question from Colm Eastwood, the leader of the SDLP at Westminster, was very interesting. It was about Conor Murphy, who is the finance minister of Northern Ireland executive, who, that someone called Paul Quinn was murdered in Northern Ireland. This came up in the Irish leaders debate last night as well, actually. And Conor Murphy implied that this man had been kind of involved in criminality and that contributed to murder, when actually he had basically been murdered by a bunch of kind of IRA thugs. And Sinn Féin have now said he will apologise to the Quinn family, but Colm Eastwood was reading it. And I think it reminds you of the point, which we often forget, of the kind of the moral compromises that have been involved in the Northern Ireland peace process. And I think what is interesting about this and a kind of healthy development is, you know, the SDLP going after Sinn Féin on this is, I think, actually a kind of reminder that, you know, that hopefully the moderate parties in Northern Ireland can begin to revive themselves, which would be a very healthy development.
And definitely not in the same league of conflict, but moving on to the sort of the tensions between number 10 and number 11. Now, it's been reported this week on multiple papers and outlets that the adjoining sort of buildings are at war, with some aides comparing it to the Israeli-Palestine conflict, which may be possibly a slight over-exaggeration. Katie, you wrote about this this morning for Coffee House. Do you believe Sajid Javid and Boris Johnson are at war?
I think if you're going to talk about whether Sajid Javid is at war with number 10, you first have to separate who in number 10 are we talking about. I think there is a general sense that Sajid Javid gets on much better with the people in the apartment than the officers. So Sajid Javid has a decent working relationship with Boris Johnson, but as has been clear for some time with multiple reports dating much further back than just this week, his relationship with some of Boris Johnson's aides, including Dominic Cummings, I think is more strained. Now, this isn't the first time we've heard of issues between number 10 and number 11. The fact that Boris Johnson, during the general election campaign, said publicly he was going to keep Sajid Javid in place in his cabinet wasn't just a simple, they got on really well, he's doing a fantastic job. It was in part because there was so much speculation that the relationship was bad that it was becoming a distraction during a general election campaign, which is why he had that public statement. Now, I think that when it comes to their relationship, there are definitely some issues. If you look at the past fortnight, this blew up a bit last week with the HS2 stories. So the fact that ahead of a crunch meeting in Downing Street to plan about the future of the high-speed rail project, it was on nearly every front page that day that Sajid Javid had decided he was going to back HS2. Now, this did land badly in number 10 because they weren't, I think, told about this in advance. They had a grid announcement that they wanted to get attention rather than this, and they didn't want to announce HS2 for some time. Still hasn't been announced. But also there is a sense that Boris Johnson had all the signs so far of suggest Boris Johnson is backing HS2. So there is a sense that Sajid Javid was potentially spotting where the Prime Minister was going and moving in there and getting a public credit to show that they were decisive when that was where it was going anywhere. So I think that adds to a strain. I think in terms of what it means for Sajid Javid's general position, I think that part of the reason I do think Sajid Javid is secure for now is the fact that he is seen as someone who will work with number 10 and often work to achieve what Boris Johnson wants. And I think that since the general election results, Sajid Javid has, by all accounts, worked very hard to show that he can deliver Boris Johnson's agenda. So before Boris Johnson went on his lovely Caribbean holiday, I think Sajid Javid made sure he had a document from him, which is all his plans to level up and how to deliver that agenda. Now, part of the reason for that was because there was some talk, and again, this was seen to be a Dominic Cummings plan, of having almost a rival power base to the Treasury, a beefed up base. Mm-hmm. And I think that part of this document, I think it worked, was to say you don't need that because the Treasury can deliver it. So I think it's fairly normal for there to be a level of tension between number 10 and number 11. When there's not, is more exceptional than when there isn't. I think that the Israel-Palestine comparison isn't quite right, shockingly, but their relationship I don't think is one which, it's not harmonious, but I also don't think he's in immediate trouble.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening.
One final thing. We at The Spectator are recruiting for a podcast producer. So if you'd like to be sitting here on the couch with us, usually not watching me eat my Dalgetty bun, but listening to
they could bring their own in.
Well, we have a whole variety of food in this place. We also produce amazing podcasts. They're very popular, we're growing fast, and we need help. So if you're interested, we're basically looking for... We've got no CV policy at The Spectator. We don't mind who you are, where you're from, how old or young you are, what stage of life you're at. If you're interested in joining us and helping us make sparks fly, then please do go to www.spectator.co.uk/podcast job. And if you're, by the way, not interested in it but know somebody who is, please direct them to it. We don't hire very often at The Spectator, but we're very keen to get the best possible person to help produce our podcasts. So thanks for listening, and thanks to Cindy Yu, our right now one man, one woman podcast team, who has done so much for us over the last few years but does need a little bit of help. So please come and help give it to her.